But for the first time in 32 years, my Detroit Lions are going to the NFC Conference Championship game. And I am excited.
Well, congratulations, by the way. Long-suffering, very long-suffering fandom.
I think that's what it is. It's long-suffering, thus my response. I mean, I am beyond excited and so happy for them. I was telling you before the show that I would be happy with, you know, they won the division, and if we can get a playoff win, great. And they did. And then they got another playoff win, another in the conference championship. And now I'm like, all right, I want more. I want it all. Give it all to me. Yes. So, yeah, after 32 years, we are there. We did it. Dan Campbell is our savior. So,
well, I think a lot of people are pulling for you. And because don't take this the wrong way, but I don't think a lot of people hate the Lions because you haven't broken anyone's hearts, you know, over the years or anything like that. So there's no like ill will. And so I think we're all kind of pulling for you.
It's not like where everyone hated the Patriots, you know, for always winning. Yankees, you know, everyone hated the Yankees for always winning. And even in hockey, I'm a little familiar with it because Red Wings would win a lot. So I'm a little familiar with hate towards Red Wings.
People just get tired of even like not winning all the time, but are just kind of always around, like the Chiefs, like they won one, but they're like always around. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like people are starting to get tired of them.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to see fresh teams come in. And particularly for me, teams that have a long history, I love seeing like old NFL teams do well.
Yeah, it's like one of the originals, and it's great to see all the support I'm seeing on social media for the Lions and all that. If we win, great. If we don't win, yes, I'll be disappointed, but it was a hell of a year either way. So
they can never take this away from you.
Yes, exactly. But one thing I do also, I call my Super Bowl is the Oscars, because I've never really experienced a Super Bowl for my team. But my Super Bowl is the Oscars. Oscar nominations just came out.
Yeah.
And we kind of wanted to reflect and take a look back at 2023 movies. I know a lot of other critics get theirs done, you know. Oh, let's get it done.
Time.
Let's get it done December 15th because we saw the movies way before everyone else.
We're pulling for February.
The thing is, we did see a lot of these movies before everyone else, and yet we're still here. We are with our top 10 of 2023, late January, at the time of this recording. I'll try to post it tomorrow, Dave. I promise.
Speaking of Oscars, do we want to go over any of the nominees, or would
might as well just a little bit. I mean did you have anything in mind like that stood out at all, or did you just want me to kind of just go through it a little?
Maybe just a brief overview of thoughts, if you thought there were any. I mean, the big news is the snub of Margot Robbie.
Yeah,
I guess that's causing the most controversy.
Yeah,
did anything stick out to you as you see?
Margot Robbie. I don't think Barbie is an Oscar nominated film. I think it's a mediocre summer comedy. I didn't think it was terrible. Didn't think it was great. It was a mediocre summer comedy. But I think America Ferrera getting the nod for supporting actress in it, kind of, I think that should make up for Margot Robbie not getting that nomination, because you got Ryan Gosling getting the supporting nod for it. Everything else pretty much was what I expected. Bradley Cooper, Paul Giamatti, Cillian Murphy, you know, in the acting categories. Annette Bening was a little bit of a surprise for NIAID, but you know,
they were pushing that one.
Yeah. Anatomy of a Fall is one I wanted to watch. Didn't get to, unfortunately. Sandra Hüller got nominated for that. But Carey Mulligan in Maestro, she did great in that. I think that was a good choice there. But I am pulling for Emily Blunt for actress in a supporting role for Oppenheimer. I know the favorite is Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers, which she did great as well. But I don't know. I'm pulling for Emily Blunt a little. And we got a Beckett appearance. What's up, Beckett? But yeah, Emily Blunt would be my favorite for that. The original song is interesting to me. Like it's definitely gonna go to Billie Eilish for What Was I Made for Barbie. I don't totally understand the nomination for I'm Just Ken. You know, it's a funny song in the movie, like to be nominated for an Oscar. I don't know. To me it's
I mean, we talked a little bit about Barbie. We did a short review on it, and neither one of us were all that impressed with it. And I think, like, we're both in agreement. If you want to call it just kind of like a silly, fun summer movie, that's fine. If you want to call it something more than that, then you're going to have to stand up to some criticism, which I don't think people are prepared to do.
Right. I mean, yeah. Again, it's if it was advertised as just this fun comedy, you know, summer comedy, fine, but to push for these awards and all that,
it's like some major like injustice or something,
right?
Like,
yeah,
because as people have rightly said, well, so in particular Margot Robbie, it's best actress. So if Margot Robbie is not nominated, then, or if she's then which woman on the list do you think should have been bumped?
Right. Yeah. I mean, because you got, I know Emma Stone, Carey Mulligan, Sandra Hüller, Lily Gladstone, and Annette Bening. Again, I guess Annette Bening was the surprise for me, but yeah. And going through this, I just realized John Williams nominated once again for original score for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Look at him.
Yeah. Was that, I guess the music was okay.
I mean, it's, first of all, it's like, basically the original music, just adding
a remix.
Little things here and there. It's, you know, John Williams still there. And what's weird is I just saw him, and why did I always think he was English? He's American. I don't know why I always thought he was English. Just little fun little factoid I learned.
He kind of looks English.
Like I was watching, I think, the Harrison Ford documentary on Disney Plus. And saw like him talking, and I was like, "Wait a minute, what?" Thought for sure he was English, but
I don't think I've ever seen him speak. To be honest,
yeah, he does speak. He doesn't just direct the music.
Just think he's just all you do is you don't have need to talk. You just conduct. That is interesting. I don't think I've ever seen an interview of him.
Yeah,
I've seen this picture a million times, and of course, as we've said, like his music is like everything.
Yeah, it's what made America cinema. Like it's one of the most important things that's ever happened to movies.
And really was, I think, one of the biggest influences for both of us, his scores in terms of getting us to love film.
100%.
So good on him. I think he's like 90 something now. He was retired, then I saw he's going to be unretired. So whatever he's got next. I wanted to just talk briefly. I didn't get to see everything that was nominated for Best Picture. One of the surprises for me, though, was it was kind of nice to see, which is, I'll just say, American Fiction. Uh-huh. I got around to see that. I liked it. I was a little surprised that it was nominated for Best Picture, but I really liked Jeffrey Wright in the movie a lot.
If Barbie's going to be nominated for Best Picture, I think should be nominated.
That's true.
I know what you mean. Like, it's like, yeah, it doesn't seem like a traditional pick for Best Picture nominee.
Yeah, though we complained about, well, last year I went on a whole spiel about how a lot of the Oscar nominees and winners are, you know, are movies that very few people ever see. And I was calling for, or at least hoping to see, a little bit more more popular choices, because that's the way it used to be. You know, the movies that win Best Picture would also were pretty popular. And so,
right.
You know, that I don't mind Barbie. It was kind of a cultural thing and everyone went crazy for it. Fine. So there are a few here that no people have seen. Like, I think American Fiction is one of them. Anatomy of the Fall. Maestro, I think, probably did pretty well because it was on Netflix.
Netflix. Yeah. Yeah.
But there's quite a few on here that I think have fallen to that no one has ever seen it before.
Oh, 100%.
I'm probably like 7 out of the 10.
But just kind of overall, just what we've seen over the last couple years, 2023 kind of as a whole, what, like, was it a good year for movies for you? Was it hard?
I think it's just an okay year.
Yeah.
It's just an okay. I think I saw more movies this year because I went back in my letterbox and I didn't get them all. And it was somewhere around 60 movies all in.
Yeah.
And I watched
a lot.
That's
like the most for you combined ever since we've done this podcast.
Probably for... it might be because I wasn't tracking. Now I'm going to track it.
And you've definitely seen more movies than me this year.
Now some of them are like crappy Netflix movies. but movies. Yeah, I didn't love this year. There was things that I liked. I don't know. I guess I haven't really liked the last few years, to be honest.
Well, yeah.
Where would you place it?
Last year when I did my top 10, I think I said, yeah, it wasn't, you know, the best year for movies, and then this year, yeah, wasn't the best year for movies either. You know, it was just kind of meh, like last year was, other than there are a couple standouts, you know, that we'll obviously get to as we give our lists. But yeah, I struggled a little bit making this top 10 because, yeah, to me, it was just like, I don't know, I could put this here. Yeah, it just, yeah. So,
yeah, and I think the theme of my list was I saw a lot of things, and then it might sound like my list might not seem like I've seen a lot of things, if that makes sense.
Hey, this list is about what you like.
I like what I like.
It's about what you like. This is our favorite movies of the year. It doesn't have to be Oscar worthy, award worthy, all that. These are just our favorite movies of the year.
There's going to be some of that, but anyway, without any further.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into it, let's get into it. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I'll start off. Number 10 is an animated film and my favorite animated movie of the year, Mario.
We'll talk about that now. I have that at my number 9.
Okay, great. Yeah, I was this is an absolute kids movie. It's a classic kids movie, I think, which is it's entertaining, keeps the adults engaged, and the kids must have been going bonkers for it. I think they did a great job of just capturing the essence of the character and making you feel like you're kind of in the video game. It looked amazing. It was funny, it was engaging. It was like maybe a bit more than 90 minutes. It wasn't too long like some of these movies tend to be. I was really surprised by it, and I just enjoyed the hell out of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say much better than what you just said. I love all the Easter eggs and the callbacks to like the original game, everything. And I thought the voice acting was spot on. I know there was all the jokes about Chris Pratt, you know, being Mario and all that, but like just Charlie Day as Luigi, and then Jack Black. I mean, he steals the show as Bowser. I even love that little ghost character that's just like a nihilist and just everything. Everything is just terrible, but he seems so okay with it. It's just there's so many little things to this movie that just it's just a fun movie to watch, and just like you said, like, I mean, this goes back to our childhood. You know, this video game has been around since, you know, we were kids.
Everybody knows it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, even falling in love with the newer games like the Mario Karts and the, you know, the Super Mario Worlds and all that. So it's it's great. Yeah, but I can't say enough about the voice acting. And when we were talking about original song, did Peaches not get nominated for original song? I know it got nominated for the Golden Globe. It did not get nominated
for
the Oscar. Come on, man. This is just, not fair. But Super Mario Bros. I mean, it's one that, whenever my kids want to watch it, I'm like, yes, please. Good choice there. Your number 10, my number 9. Anything else you got on it?
No, just I was really, really enjoyed the movie.
I really liked it.
I wasn't even, my daughter wasn't even born then. I wasn't watching it with her. Just my wife and I watched it. And we just had as two adults.
Whoa, really dude, you're watching animated movies without kids? bro, what are you, some sort of weirdo? Bet you go to Disney too, you weirdo.
I know, right?
I love it.
We had an annual pass. This is back in the day, man. Yeah. What do you want from me?
Hey,
I can have fun too.
me and my wife, before we were married, went on dates to watch animated movies. And before we had kids too. I guess you could have kids before you're married too, but you know what I mean.
You can.
You can, but
people do that.
It's ill-advised.
Teach their own.
My number 10, it's one I wanted to put in there just because it's very unique. I like this director. He's done quite a few unique things, and I'm doing Poor Things. I always butcher his name. Lorgos.
Lanthimos?
Yeah. Hold on. Where is his name? Yeah. Yorgos Lanthimos. There we go. Yep. Thank you. With Emma Stone. To me, though, the star of the show in this movie is Mark Ruffalo. He's one of those actors that he's sort of like a Matt Damon to me, like just kind of, he's just a solid actor, just kind of plays the same type of character every time. Not annoying, not anything spectacular. But in this movie, like, this is the best, like, this is something I've never seen out of him before. Like, he actually plays like a character, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, he has, he just has these different beats to him. He's got an accent, and it's just something I've never really seen out of him. That's the standout to me. But the movie is definitely very interesting. Very, you could say it's a little pretentious. it's got the fisheye lens all the time, the cinematography, this weird stuff with, Willem Dafoe's in it. So, come on, it's going to be a little weird. And I love Willem Dafoe. The premise is essentially kind of a Frankenstein premise. She's a reanimated body. And her brain is a baby, and she kind of grows from adolescence to adulthood. Her brain does just as the character does. So it's like true character development, and it's about the loss of innocence and all this. It's worth a watch if you're into artsy type of films, and if you like Yorgos Lanthimos, because it's his style. He did The Favorite, The Lobster, Killing of a Sacred Deer. If you liked those movies, I think this will definitely pique your interest. I think it's a little less than Lobster and The Favorite, but still, I think it's worthy of being on this list. Emma Stone did fantastic, going through different periods of her life, because again, she has a baby's brain at the beginning, and you see her, growing up throughout the film. So like I said, it's like true character development, as much as I hate that phrase, but that's
in this case the epitome of it.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, if you like this director, if you're into artsy movies, definitely check it out. That's definitely a memorable one for this year. So yeah, Poor Things is my number 10.
Excellent. So I'll kick to my number 9. I'm gonna go with Tetris.
Tetris. I did not see this one. That's interesting. They're coming out with everything about every story ever made.
I was basically just for things to come. I was a sucker for these movies this year. I loved all of them. Just about all of them that I saw.
This is with Taron Egerton, right?
Taron Egerton. Yeah, it's the story of how basically we got Tetris to the masses, in a sense. It was like developed by this Russian, and Taron Egerton was working for Nintendo and Japan, and then trying to basically, it's a story of kind of getting the rights, but also like doing it. It's sort of humor and espionage. He has to go visit the Soviet Union and like to get the to be able to bring the game to get it licensed. And it sounds kind of boring, but it's actually really entertaining and a lot of fun.
Yeah. I like when simple stories like that, though, there's a reason why they make these movies. Like, it's, mm-hmm. yes, obviously money grabs, all that, but you know, they're not going to, I shouldn't say they're not going to, but typically you're not going to make a movie because it's totally disinteresting and you know, but the fact that it's on your list though, definitely intrigues me even more about it. So yeah, definitely.
I really liked it. Taron Egerton is so good.
There's another movie that you bringing this up made me realize I forgot to put a movie on my list. I have a feeling it's going to be on your list, so I'll let you know what it is when it comes up, and because then I'll have more questions for you on it. Who else is in this besides Taron Egerton? If you know off the top of your head, like, is there
no one that I can, no one that I really recognized? A lot of minor actors.
Okay.
Yeah, if I look it up, yeah, I don't. I'm even looking. Oh, Toby Jones.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But that's it.
I was just curious. Yeah, I mean, I have Google as well. I could have looked that up.
But, I think this was a really, really low budget movie.
Yeah, I want to say it's an Apple TV movie. Yeah, maybe, it something was like that. Yeah. Yeah. So all right, Tetris. It's just called Tetris, isn't it?
That's it.
It's just called Tetris. That's right.
And a movie in under 2 hours. So scratching me right where
Dave's I Dave's favorite. He got his scratch itched. I almost said here, itch scratched. I guess either way works. The other way would have worked. Oh, it's been a long day, folks.
Let's keep it moving.
Dave, I love making Dave feel uncomfortable with my awkward comments. My number 9, like I said, was Super Mario Bros. So I guess I'll go to my number 8. I have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Oh, nice. I have the. I guess I have that right here. Yeah.
Number 8?
Yep.
All right. Guardians. Nice. Awesome. Yeah, this one, I did not care for Guardians 2. You know, there were elements of it that were nice and, you know, the whole father aspect with him and the blue guys, you know, the dude who raised them. Can't think of the name right now. Nerds. You know, that whole storyline. But yeah, this 3, man, this really hits you in the feels. The whole Rocket story and it had, you know, and the way they're able to just, with all these movies, mix in the humor with the emotion. And this one, yeah, again, it's, you know, it's not unpopular to say how Marvel has gone downhill since Endgame. You know, it's kind of just crappy superhero movies now. But this one, to me, it was just good. It didn't matter about the MCU or anything. It just perfectly encapsulated the trilogy. And I thought it was, did everything it needed to do emotionally and just so entertaining.
Yeah, I love the Guardians. They're just my favorite. These are the movies I will throw on at any time. And I'll put on, when I'm riding down the road, I'll throw on the Guardian soundtrack just because it reminds me of the movie and it makes me happy. Like,
this is one I don't know why I haven't gone back to. Like, I saw it in the theater when it first came out, and yeah, I haven't gone back to it yet, and I need to.
Yeah, it's good. It's a perfect end to the trilogy, I thought, and maybe pulling on the heartstrings a little too hard. But I really liked the story's good. James Gunn is just such a great writer. The villain I really liked, surprisingly good.
Yeah.
What was it called?
I don't know
whatever his name was, but
we do so much research on this show.
I would call it out immediately. For some reason I was blanking on me. But the actor was great. And of course, you know, we love Pratt and the dynamic of a whole, it was great to it.
The high evolutionary was
high evolutionary. There it is. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean that essentially is Rocket's movie, and yeah, just so it tugged at your heartstrings too much.
Well, because it's a bit manipulative, because there's like the animal abuse stuff and that angle, you know. True. So I can see where it's like someone might, you know, you can say this is a bit like, you know, you're kind of pushing past character, and now you're just, I'm just naturally sympathetic because these animals are being tortured.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think anyone with any sort of heart and isn't 100% a sociopath or a psychopath, yeah, it would tug at their heartstrings. So. But yeah, Guardians, yeah, that's definitely a memorable movie of 2023 for sure. It's I want to say the first time I've had a superhero movie on here since then. Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. Whatever. Stop saying things, Ben, Spider-Man. That you can't back up. Yeah, I guess Spider-Man was probably on there. So yeah, never mind. What's your number 7?
Oh, you're gonna hate this. My number 7 is a racing movie, and it's not Ferrari. Which I watched, by the way. And speaking of Oscars, Penelope Cruz, I could have seen a nomination for her.
Are you saying Ferrari will not be on your list?
No. Sorry, let me be very clear. I picked a racing movie, but it's not Ferrari. It is Gran Turismo. My number 7.
Which actually,
you're laughing, you're loving it.
We are part of the Critics Association of Central Florida, and for some reason, that one was not eligible for awards. For some reason,
I don't know why either. I think
Our
Sony movie was released.
Our top 10 is different, so we can have it. So all right, so what? And I know you did a review on it and everything, but number 7 movie of the year. What? Why?
I just loved it. I was inspired. I was genuinely inspired. It's a combination of, it's kind of like Top Gun. It's a Top Gun sports movie in a sense. It's man and machine overcoming an obstacle.
Yeah.
Going through adversity, people coming together. It's just a fun, inspiring. So like, if you ever seen the movie, any sports movie, like Hoosiers, if you want to go back, Remember the Titans, stuff like, it has those kinds of moments in it. And this one, it's race car, and it happened to be based on a true story. I had so much fun with it. David Harbour's really good. Orlando Bloom's really good. And the lead, I forget his name. It was an expertly crafted and edited film, and it just did. It is something that kept it really simple and straightforward. It was all about the racing. It's kind of a coming of age, trying to find yourself. What's my purpose in this world? And it kind of hit. It just hit every single beat. And I had no. And some of them were predictable. And it's just like, you know, when I'm eating a really good cheeseburger and fries. Like, hey, the fries are going to be salty and crispy, and there's going to be tomato and mayonnaise and lettuce on the burger, and it's no surprise, but it's done really well. Yeah. And I walk away and I'm really satisfied and I'm happy. When the credits rolled, I just had a big smile on my face. And I don't think I can say that for any other movie on my list.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. That's what you want in a movie. That's why we watch movies. So can't really knock you for that.
I'm not saying it's the best movie I've ever seen or anything. I just had a great time with it.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, that's...
So that's my controversial pick.
That's why we watch movies. I can't really knock you for it either, because I've never seen it. So, you know, I can't do that. But, you know, I'm glad... Glad we have some diversity in this list. So good.
And it's a car movie, so I know you'll never see it.
Exactly. I'm not a car guy. I'm not a car guy. Would Ferrari be an honorable mention for you?
Maybe. You know, it's funny. Adam Driver's really, really great in it, and Penelope Cruz is too. But as you were like, it's another car movie. We're like like structurally, the movies are kind of very similar. I mean, one's more of a deep character or deeper character study of Ferrari and who he was and like his personal life. But at the end of the day, and that was directed by Michael Mann. The one thing about that movie is the sound, the racing. The sound is amazing. But nah, I wouldn't put it as an honorable mention. I like the performances, but I didn't love the movie.
All right, so that was your number seven.
Yeah.
My number seven is, second year in a row, it's a Tom Cruise movie. It's Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part One. Yeah, I mean, this is action. It's pure action, movie that builds on the story that is Mission Impossible. It's not just, a serial or anything. Like, it actually builds upon these movies. You know, you got some of these action movies that just come out, like Fast and the Furious, where it's just like, oh, this is just what they're doing in this movie. This is what, but this has something to it. Just, yeah, the incredible stunts. I mean, just, I don't know. Tom Cruise just knows what he's doing when it comes to action movies. I know it's not just him that does it. You got Christopher McQuarrie, the director, but, you know, just the, it's just, What more can you want from a summer flick, summer blockbuster? It's yeah, I mean, there's, you know, gave you can check out a review of it, but it's just I couldn't not have a movie like this on my list. Trying to see where it would fall on my Mission Impossible rankings. I think Fallout might be a little better, the one that came before this. But this is, yeah, a close second, but it leaves you wanting more. Again, it's Dead Reckoning Part One, so it leaves you like, oh, crap, what's going to happen in the second one? So it's exciting. It's popcorn movie all around. I see your racing movie and I raise you my Tom Cruise Mission Impossible action flick.
I was a little disappointed with this movie. I think I probably had too high of expectations.
Yeah.
Because I love all of them.
Right.
And Fallout, I think Fallout is much better than this. This one, although I haven't watched it twice. I only watched it one time when the baby came out. She was 2 weeks old. And I think my wife and I watched this in 30-minute increments over like four nights. So that's not quite fair.
That usually doesn't help. It also doesn't help to say when the baby came out.
arrived, was born. She was like 2 weeks old, and it was like we barely had our anything together. So maybe I need to rewatch it. But I will say what I didn't like is the sort of the villain and then the guy speaking for the AI villain. None of that really jived with me. And I thought the movie was just way too long. But what I did love, I love the women, Hayley Atwell, Vanessa Kirby, and yeah. Was it Pom Klementoff, the one who plays Mantis in Guardians?
Yep. I'm not going to try to pronounce her name, but yeah, she's in that. Yes.
I love these
Rebecca
women.
Ferguson as well.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah.
So I already got them all like who they are in my life. Like Rebecca Ferguson is like, you know, she wants to kill me kind of, but, you know, she's like a one night stand. Same probably with Pom. But then, like, Vanessa Kirby's, like, the one that got away.
Yeah.
But it was probably my fault. And then, like, Hayley Atwell's the one you, like, lock down and marry and have babies with.
Yeah, exactly. I remember now that I took my brother Matt to the screener for this. And, yeah, we did the review coming out. And I remember being a little nervous when the movie first started because it was just, like, we're setting up the plot and we're all in a room talking and I'm going to finish your sentence. And like, it's like, people don't talk like this. What is happening? But yeah, then the movie, yeah, that whole train sequence was amazing. The whole motorcycle jump, like it's just pure, just for me, just action-packed joys. So just had to put it on my list. So
yeah, well done. But yeah, I loved seeing all those women kick ass. They were legit believable in everything they did, which you don't always get in an action movie. And Tom Cruise, of course, is amazing. So I hope, now that movie kind of bombed, so we're hoping whatever the follow-up movie does much better.
You're such a feminist, bro.
No, they're just hot and good actresses, man.
Oh, man. Shea Whigham is in this. He's great in everything.
Oh, yeah. He's great. Yeah.
Like, he's like just like a character actor, not just a character actor. Good. But he's like, everything he's in is just like, he just pulls it off. Yeah. He's one of the cops, I think, in Joker. I know he's in Silver Linings Playbook. But yeah, anything he's in, I'm just like, yeah, he's great. Great character actor.
He was in, there's a Perry Mason series that they canceled after two seasons on HBO, and he was in that, and he was like the only good thing on the show.
Yeah. So yeah, that's when you know you got something good. So yeah, Mission Impossible is my number 7.
Excellent.
What you got next?
So this will be my 6, right?
I don't know. That's on you to know. What? I believe this would be your 6, yeah.
And nine. 8, 7, 6, yeah. Okay, number 6 is David Fincher's The Killer, starring Michael Fassbender.
This is one I missed. I really wanted to see this. I still haven't. I'm going.
It's
to
just
see
sitting
it.
There on your just, Netflix, man. Just go.
I know. Put it on. I chose Maestro instead.
You did.
Yeah. Tell me about it, man.
It's a different movie. It's not what you would like. It doesn't seem like your typical Fincher film. I don't think spoiling anything, but Michael Fassbender plays a contract killer.
Yeah.
And the movie, it almost has a surprising dark humor to it. The entire like inertia of the plot starts with a giant screw up by the Fassbender character. Yeah, we got the poster. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the poster I got for the movie. Thanks to Netflix for sending this, and I still haven't watched it.
And he is so perfectly cast because he's very like robotic and mechanical, and his face and his look is so like, I want to almost call it like mannequin-like, that he can wear any sets of clothes and walk, and then he just completely blends in as just guy. Like, he looks almost generic in a sense because he's always changing his outfits, and he pulls it off so well. But so there's some dark humor in there. There's one hand-to-hand action scene, which is one of the best I've ever seen, since like as good as like a John Wick fight scene, him fighting another person. It's a really interesting film because the words that come out of the character's mouth are betrayed by his actions immediately afterwards. He has like a mantra that he repeats. It's to keep him on task and not, getting caught, that kind of a thing. But he does things like completely in opposition to that. And he's got to kind of figure out like what his life is going to be and what kind of a life he's going to live.
Curious. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm done.
I'm always curious. And I don't mean this like as the ending this way. But for me, is it a satisfying movie?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because that's, I don't know. Yeah, because I mean,
it's left a little ambiguous.
More just there's aspects that are like satisfying, but then there's, you know, you would have liked a better ending, maybe, or
maybe the ending could have been a little better. Yeah.
I don't know. Like I love when I hear there's a satisfying ending, but at the same time, I also don't want to hear it. There is one if there is to somebody, because then I might be disappointed. this kind of seems like, anyway, like with the promos, it reminds me a little of Drive with Ryan Gosling. Is it like that at all, would you say, or am I stressed? I mean, again, I'm only going off of trailer and promo and things like that.
I just sort of.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, yeah, just that popped in my head when I look at like the poster and the trailer, and even though in Drive he's not really an assassin, he's just kind of the getaway driver guy,
right? What a cool jacket.
Yeah, exactly. And it's Ryan Gosling.
but I really recommend this one. definitely worth a watch. And Fassbender is really good. It's a lot of narration, which I kind of like in my movies. So
no, I like that too. Yeah. That's I guess you got narration with Fight Club with David Fincher. You got Gone Girl, I think, has narration. So yeah, he seems like, yeah, that's kind of a theme for him. I want to say Benjamin Button even has that, even though I'm don't quote me on that. All right, so that's your number
six.
All right, awesome. My number six is another animated film. Two animated films on this list. Into the Spider-Verse.
Ooh.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. First of all, the first one was just blew me away. Just the animation style and just the emotion involved and just the way they told the story. And then this one I don't want to say it topped it, but it was almost equal to it. As I said about Mission Impossible, is Dead Reckoning Part 1 called Dead Reckoning Part 1. So like, you know, there's going to be a second one. Whereas this one, I think it helped me that I forgot that they were going to make another one to this. Or, you know, there was one in the works, because the ending for me made it that much better, that I didn't know there was going to be like a follow-up to this specific one. So I think that helped a lot. I love the animation style they do with this, the whole, you know, the Miles Morales and Peter Parker relationship. And then in this one, you have all the Spider-Men and all the Spider-Verses like that meet in this headquarters. And it's just so unique what they can do with it. And it's just, I love what they did with it. It made it so much fun. I think Oscar Isaac was a great addition to the voice acting his character. And yeah, it was just one of those movies where it was like an animated film that had almost a twist, you know, at the end, and then even a cliffhanger. And it was just like, wow, like I cannot wait for this next animated movie to come out. And that's why it's like there is this stigma with animated films, I think, where it's like, oh, it's just for kids. This to me just proves that just if you make it animated, you have all the possibilities in the world. And voice acting obviously adds a lot to that. But this movie was fantastic.
What did you say?
I quoted your favorite movie, and that's all I have to say about that.
Oh. I like this movie as well, not as much as you. I think, whereas the ending didn't work for me, and I would go farther and say there was not an ending.
I think that's what. Yeah, again, I guess maybe that's for some reason I liked that.
Simply. Ending, like abruptly turning the lights off on a scene, is not an ending. And so that really just ticked me off. That's my biggest gripe for me. But for me, it was such a big gripe because, you know, just for example, the Empire Strikes Back, it's the second movie and there's a continuing story and it ends in a big reveal. But the plot resolves itself by the conclusion of the movie. We don't just like, I don't know, like say after Luke gets his arm chopped off, we just end, or Vader says, "I am your father," and then it ends, right? I mean, we allow the movie to resolve its action to come to sort of a conclusion where we then know like next steps moving forward, taking stock, taking a breath of what just happened and knowing what we have to do next.
Logically, I get that. Yeah, I guess I did watch it again, and yeah, just for some reason, them all coming together at that very end and just knowing that, like, oh man, like for me, it was just like such a hurrah moment that they're all getting together to save Miles.
Yeah, that is cool.
Sorry, spoiler alert for folks, but But yeah, it was just, I don't know why, not knowing that another movie was coming out. Like, cause I remember like being like, there's only gotta be like 10, 15 minutes left. Like, how are they going to resolve this stuff? And then the fact that it just ended, I was like, oh yes. And I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, it worked, but yeah, no, I get the, what you were saying. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. Totally understandable,
but I'm looking forward.
You're wrong, to the third one. But yeah,
yeah, and we know there'll be an ending to that one.
Yes. Well, do we know? We don't. We don't know for sure.
Maybe not. Maybe that'll be a big tease too. So it's time for my. We're now in the nitty gritty.
Nitty gritty in our top five of 2023.
I gotta be honest. I'm real solid on my top two. But the three here, 2, 3, and 4, I can just roll the dice on any of them. So I'll say that ahead of time. So I'm looking at this, and I don't know which one to say. So I'm just going to go ahead and say Air, directed by Ben Affleck. That's my number 5 movie of the year. Loved it. This is an ancient.
I was just going to say that's my number 4. So, yeah, we can
talk. Oh, okay, let's go. Oh, I can make that my number 4. Let's make that my number 4.
No. Let's okay. We'll talk about it now, and yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad you watched it. I mean, I did a glowing review of it earlier in the year. This is like an ancient movie. I think the release date kind of didn't help maybe Oscar considerations, maybe, but maybe not. I don't know.
Right.
This is another one. Just, I thought another example of just a brilliantly edited and performed film with a really tight script, telling a very clear story. Matt Damon's amazing. And Affleck for his brief time is amazing. Viola Davis, incredible.
Well, and Ben Affleck the whole time as he directed it, you know, the great direction. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, great direction. Yeah. And then the way they chose to portray Michael Jordan as just sort of like a looming figure in the background rather than like a speaking character, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah.
So yeah, love the movie. Highly recommend if you guys haven't seen it.
Yeah. It's just like such a, like I said, I have it as my number 4. It's just, yeah, just like kind of a almost fast pace. It's like very well edited and just very well directed, obviously. And it's just like keeps you engaged the whole time. And like you said, Matt Damon does great. And even Jason Bateman is great in this movie. So and it's like a story on the simpler side, you know, but it's made to be captivating. And like you said, they don't focus on Michael Jordan. Like, that's really not what this is about. This is about kind of overcoming the odds and, you know, believing in this person and believing in yourself to, you know, this is, we can do this, you know, we can make Nike the shoe it is. And there's just the comedy that's mixed in. Like, I love that ending scene with him trying to jog at the end. He's just like, screw this. Like, who jogs?
I love that. I think there's something that's like hard to capture for a director and sort of hard for us to describe, but there's like a vibe to the film. There's an energy and a feeling when you're watching it that's just like, it's got an energy and like a rhythm to it that's so good, and it just keeps moving. It's like listening to a song in a way, you know.
Yeah, it's this movie is great, and it's one of those movies where it almost has like a Moneyball effect to it, whereas Moneyball is like, it's not flashy, it's not, you know, crazy, but you're just so interested in the story, you know. I don't know, something about it, like I can just flip this on anytime and just, you know, just
it just like sucks you in.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, great choice. I'm glad you have that as far up as you do. Like I said, that's my number 4. That's your number 5. So I guess I'll give my number 5, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I have another Netflix film. Speaking of the killer, Bradley Cooper's Maestro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this was scared me a little at first when I was first watching it. I was like, oh, is this going to be just pretentious? Like, oh my God, you're just trying to get an award. But no, Bradley Cooper to me, after A Star Is Born and now this, is just, he's a talented dude, man. He is, just obviously he loves music. I mean, you got A Star Is Born and now this, two different kinds of music. I think the big things that stand out to me for this is Bradley, Cooper's acting. It's just, my wife looked at me during and was just like, this is like, I can't even tell it's him. Like,
really?
Yeah. It's, you know, you get those performances where it's like, you know, sometimes you can say like, okay, that's Johnny Depp being
right.
That guy. Whereas this was just Bradley Cooper was, Leonard Bernstein. And I honestly never even heard of the guy before this movie. He did West Side Story, you know, the music to that. I think that's one of the biggest things he did. But yeah, he
a lot was of Broadway a, stuff, a right?
Composer, yeah, Broadway yeah. stuff. But
that's not really, we don't really, that's yeah, not really our, we, our that's
not, yeah, stay tuned for our Tony Award, podcast we're going to be doing this year. But yeah, the acting and then, yeah, just there's one particular scene of him composing. It's like a 6 minute long, no cut scene. Mm-hmm. And I know no cuts scenes doesn't necessarily mean talented or anything like that, but it just, a movie that just sucks you in like that because it's just like no cuts, anything like that. Like just, I don't know. And so those two things, just the passion I could see that Bradley Cooper had for, making this project, and, alluded to it earlier. Carey Mulligan was fantastic, as his wife, in this film. And it just, yeah, just one of those movies about, you know, just loving your art, and it's for lovers of art, no matter what medium it is. You can tell that Bradley Cooper truly loves his art. He loves music. He loves acting. He loves directing. He loves writing. And, I think it really shines through, in this film. So yeah. I think, yeah, unfortunately, I don't think he's going to win anything for it, just because there's a couple other movies that are a little higher up. If this was a different year, I think this would have been the Maestro year. It's just, yeah, sometimes mm-hmm. it's just bad timing. But yeah, Maestro, recommend it. A little on the longer side. But if you're, for you, maybe watch it in two parts, you know?
Over a weekend.
Half and half, yeah. But yeah, just the passion involved, I guess, is my
okay. Yeah, thing. So you're like the commitment to the craft and all that. Yeah,
yeah, the commitment to the craft, and yeah, just again, not even recognizing that it's Bradley Cooper, like it's, mm-hmm. and just how far he's come as an actor to me is just incredible. Like just seeing him in Wedding Crashers as the douchebag to now just, you know, being this amazing, artist.
Do you think that's part of his motivation, is to be make sure he's taken super serious?
I don't think so. I think he just truly, just watching interviews with him and stuff, like I think he just truly loves this. Like I think he just truly loves acting and directing, and I think it's his love. I don't think he cares what people think of him. He just, this is what he loves.
Yeah. Carey Mulligan, did you mention her? I don't.
Yeah, Carey Mulligan, I did. Yeah, she plays the wife, and yeah, she's outstanding in this film.
So worthy of the nomination?
Oh, 100%, yeah. If it were up to me, I'd give her the win. Statistics tell me it's going to Killers of the Flower Moon, actress.
Mm-hmm. Gladstone.
Lily Gladstone, yeah. So, but yeah, if it were up to me, it'd be Carey Mulligan, but I digress. But yeah, that's my number five. My number four was Air. What was your number four?
My number four might be a little surprise, but I'm going for Ridley Scott's Napoleon, starring Joaquin Phoenix.
Nice. Another one I missed, so excited to hear your thoughts.
This one also has the lovely Vanessa Kirby.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is she his wife? Is she his wife?
Yeah, Josephine. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I will describe this. I'll try to describe this movie. Isn't perfect, but it's one that I watched it with a wife. She loves it. She's like, I really want it because we got the screener. She's like, when this thing comes out again, we only got a digital one. She's like, I want.
Well, she didn't watch your screener because she's not allowed. But
You guys watched. Yeah. I told her about it, and she says,
right. Well, and you guys went to the theater and saw it. Yeah.
So yes.
I don't care. I'm just kidding.
Go ahead. The premise of this movie is obviously the story of Napoleon, and there's a lot there. And what's different about this one is there's a lot truncated, which I guess could be a criticism of the film because it covers a lot of stuff over about 2.5 hours. What the basis of the film is that they used Napoleon and Josephine would write letters to each other. And at some point, those letters, I think after Josephine's death, they were willed to someone or someone bought them. And they became public record.
Right.
And so kind of this – it's a biopic of Napoleon but through the eyes of his communications with Josephine, if that makes sense. And it's kind of interesting because it takes you from like – the early days, like as the French Revolution is happening and people are getting beheaded. There's a lot of quite a bit of gore in this movie, a lot of gnarliness, and then sort of Napoleon's rise to power, proving himself as a military genius kind of a thing. All that stuff is great because Ridley Scott's always good with the action and the and like period piece action. It's so good. There was some concern about like the cuckoldry for this because she cheated on him. And what was interesting in the film is that this was like tabloids back in the day. Like it was like a TMZ version of like calling out his wife cheating on him and him having to go home humiliated to having to face her.
Oh, wow.
And then have him having to like kind of like smack her down about it, but they have like a real love and a real bond. And it becomes really the heart of the movie is their relationship, which is kind of in itself, much like Napoleon's life, it's like kind of doomed to fail.
Yeah.
And it sort of parallels that in the way that they're there for each other, sort of two people who are good for each other, are volatile, but help each other. And then when they split, they become worse without each other. If that makes sense. My wife absolutely loves it. I liked it too. There's some parts where I don't think Joaquin Phoenix is actually the best cast for this. And it didn't seem like he knew exactly what to do in the role, which surprised me because he's such a good actor.
And does he do his American accent or does he do like
an English accent? He does. Yeah, he's American.
I don't get that.
Yeah.
I guess and that is what it is, but yeah, it's...
he's very stiff in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't love him in the role, unfortunately. But I liked what the movie was, and I liked what the movie was trying to do. And I really enjoyed the film.
I know there were a lot of gripes with historical inaccuracies, things like that. Did you look up anything about it? Or
I don't care. I mean, yeah. What do I care?
That's pretty much how I am. Like, I just want a good movie. Same with, you know, when people complain about, oh, this comic book movie wasn't accurate to the comic books. Like, it's like, who cares? I just want a good movie. Look at Quentin Tarantino with Inglorious Bastards, Killing Hitler, like they did in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And
yeah, it's like fantasy. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's
but well, this one isn't that. I think it's more.
Well, I know it's not that bad, but yeah.
No. but I think it is interesting to see how this man became who he was. And I think the movie has a point of view, which is to not like him. It definitely has a point of view not to like him. But so I think that's part of it. But it's also the way he was treated by, because he wasn't royalty and he ended up becoming emperor of France after people went and beheaded all the royal families and killed the king and all that stuff.
Is he like, technically regarded as like a bad guy in history, or
I think so. Yeah, he's regarded as a bad guy. Yeah, because he waged a lot of war.
So he said I'm going to war against you when he really didn't need to that kind of thing. Like
there was conflicts. I mean, there was always tensions. And so what happened was once France, I don't know, we're going like a whole
That's all right. Hold that question. Lesson time.
But basically, once they had the revolution, they deposed the whole power structure. So they then became vulnerable.
Mm.
So people like England to start picking off little places where they can take over, that kind of a thing. So
then they became the France that we know now.
Exactly.
Just kidding. I love France. I love you, French folk.
But I thought it was a good movie. I would recommend it. I really liked it.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it again. It's just, yeah, one of those.
I don't think anybody. I think it bombed, but yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it is.
It's not my money.
It is what it is. Not my money. We got a screener to it. You know, what are you going to do? That was your number.
Four.
Four. My number three is one I did a review to. Kind of shows the quality of movies this year, because I gave it a fairly favorable review, but typically a review I gave it wouldn't have put it this high. But I put Past Lives as my number three. It's just such a unique film. It's I've never really seen a movie like that with the way they tell the story and how it's not a typical, you know, romance story. It's one of kind of the one that got away type thing, but you know, it's got a lot of complicated elements, you know, to it. You know, she's you know, keeps reconnecting with this person she knew back in Korea when she lived there as a child, and you know, moved to America and is basically Americanized now, but has a chance meeting with him years and years later after connecting every 10 years or so. And now she has a husband and everything. And, you know, they have a day together in which, you know, it's touching and it's, I don't want to say it's relatable, because, you know, it's not something I've been through or anything, but I guess that's why, yeah, it's interesting that there's a movie about it where it's a romantic movie that doesn't have the traditional romance you see in films.
Okay.
So it's very, very well done. The shots in it, the cinematography, and just the, you know, you could tell it's low budget, but they were able to still film on location in New York City, and you could tell that they must have done it like early in the morning in some spots, like to be able to film in certain spots. But yeah, I think this is it's a great movie, especially for, you know, movie nerds like myself and pretentious movie nerds like myself.
You are.
It's very unique, and it's one of those where if you're a movie buff, you should watch it. I thought it was very well done, very well acted, and totally worthy of being one of the top films this year. I know it got nominated for, what did it get nominated for? It got nominated for Best Picture. I know that. I did not get nominated for Best Director, and I think that might be an uproar this year because, no, there's... Oh, no, we do have one female director, Anatomy of a Fall, which it was between that and Poor Things when I watched it. Yeah, and I just picked Poor Things just because...
And I was interested in that one, too, and I just never got around to it.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Past Lives is my number three. And yeah, just, I know you're never going to watch it, but, it's just one of those films. It's very unique and it's an easy watch, is the thing.
Is it?
And,
yeah.
It is an easy watch. Yeah. An hour and a half long. And
okay.
Yeah,
just, oh, well now I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. And, yeah, just the still shots and just the actors are all likable. I know you asked me about the cuckold thing when I first
I'm very concerned, but my cuckdar went up. Yeah.
It's so interesting because her husband is likable and the guy she knew in Korea is very likable. They're both so likable, and it's just like, yeah, you're torn. But anyway, Past Lives, number three.
Great. Well, yeah. Because we also, you did a review on that previously. So I think I asked you everything I wanted to know on that. So good. Glad you liked it. Glad it ranked so highly for you, resonated. Great. So number three for me.
Number three for you.
All right. This is number three for me is The Iron Claw, starring Zac Efron.
Okay.
Jeremy Allen White.
One where I requested the screener for. I know you got. I never ended up getting it. So yeah,
it was supposed to come in the mail, and this kind of screwed us.
Yeah, you ended up getting the digital screener, so that was I did. Good. Yeah. So, but yeah, let's hear.
Because the idea of me being able to leave my house and go see a movie, in a theater.
Come on.
This one's directed by Sean Durkin, who I don't think I've seen anything by him before. This one is another. I guess I'd call this a sports tragedy. Kind of quality there. And now what's interesting is that the movie is based on the Von Erich family. So it's based on a true story. And I assume, most of everything I've seen and you see in the movie is accurate. The movie doesn't make me sad. There are sad moments. But what it leaves me with is a giant emptiness inside me. And it stuck with me for like 3 or 4 days after watching the movie.
Do you think that's what the movie intended to do?
I think so. In a way, there's a lot of tragic moments in the movie. And it's directed, interestingly, it's not over the top. If anything, it's underdone. It's very sort of matter of fact. It doesn't play things up really with like, a setup with a score and people with streaming tears. The movie almost never does that. It's just like... Sure. Everyone is sort of expected to move on, and then the movie kind of moves on, and it just adds to the pain that just becomes like a gaping wound. And then there's a crescendo to the film where, the final tragedy hits, and you're just left like, I'm dead inside. Like, I'm not even sad. I'm just dead.
Wow.
I got nothing. Yeah. It's a really weird kind of it's hard to express.
Go ahead.
No, you go. You got a question?
Were you familiar with the story at all before this movie?
Not at all. Very, very loosely familiar with it.
I'm not at all. I've never even.
This is before my time. I was a wrestling fan, but. I'm more of a 90s wrestling guy than this because this stuff happened like it's more like 70s, early 80s kind of thing, gotcha. I think.
Yeah.
Or mid 80s. I don't even know. So it takes place over many years. It's insane. It really happens. So it's not really a spoiler to talk about it, but
right.
If you don't know, it's better to not know and just watch the movie.
Yeah.
To see what this family went through.
Do you think you feel the same way the characters do? I guess I'm just curious as to your feeling on it. Like you were kind of, it almost seems like you were numb to the tragedy. Is that the same way the characters were?
I think they were trying to find numbness in a way that was bad and ended up ultimately tragic. Zac Efron is just okay. I like him. He's not great in this. He's kind of bland. He kind of comes with an accent. He's not bad by any means. But I think it's really kind of the story. He's the central point of the film. And the story kind of it's hit through his perspective. He's nothing crazy great, but he's good. Lily James is in it. She's really good.
So Lily James is more of the acting standout in it.
Yeah, and what she does is she brings a real much needed like sense of fresh air and warmth to the film. There's a coldness throughout this entire film. There's a real lack of love in this family, and she kind of injects that into the Zac Efron character, and that injection, I teared up. I'm not embarrassed to say I cry a lot in movies that are emotional. I teared up twice in the movie. Once when she shows that love the Zac Efron character in the beginning of the movie. And then at the end, there's sort of a, there's a moment between him and his boys, which is just, you know, just, wow, unbelievably sad and just, but for a good way. Just so the two things that got me were like the outpouring of love from one character to the main character, Zac Efron. The tragedy stuff never like brought me to a well up. It was just more like, I can't believe this. Like, I can't believe that this actually, I can't believe that this is a real story. Like, it's the kind of a feeling. It's so unbelievably shitty what these people, what happened to this family and sort of the whys around it, and the aftermath and what could have been done to stop this? Who's kind of at fault? Why? And did it have to be this way? So I would recommend, and I'm trying to be as vague as possible. So if you watch this movie and you like it, I would say this is one we should do a whole show on.
Yeah. Jeremy Allen White, I don't know if you saw The Bear or if you watched The Bear. How is he good in it?
He's great.
Yeah.
He's exactly who you thought would think he would be. Gotcha. Yeah, perfect in the role.
I definitely, like I said, my intention was to watch it. I just, never got the screener. Come on, folks.
Holt McCallany, I don't know if you ever saw the Mindhunter series on Netflix, the David Fincher Mindhunter series. He's in this as the dad. He's really good.
Okay.
And then, Maura Tierney. I only know her from Liar, Liar, the mom and Liar.
Oh, yeah. I think she was in maybe ER.
Oh, maybe.
Or something like that. But all right. Yeah, no, this is one I definitely wanted to check out.
This is one I would love to spend an hour talking about.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. All right. So yeah, that was your number three.
My number three.
Yeah. My number two is... it relates a little bit to a movie we did a couple years ago because it has the same actor, same director, Alexander Payne, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers.
My number two.
And your number two as well. All right. Yeah. I figured we'd have the top two.
The one and two.
The same. Yeah. The Holdovers, man. Yeah. I mean, it's Paul Giamatti. I mean, it's his show, but not only his show, let me look up the actor. Hold on.
Dominic Sessa.
Yeah, it's not only Paul Giamatti's show. It's Paul. It's not only Paul Giamatti's show. It's Dominic Sessa's show as well. I mean, he's basically the central character, I would say. I mean, being the student, Divine Joy Randolph, we alluded to earlier, who I think is going to get the supporting actress win for the Oscars. You can't go wrong with Paul Giamatti being a grump.
That's such a funny way to say it. So true.
it's just one of those movies where it's you got the grumpy teacher with the student who wants to rebel and then they find common ground, but it's just more to it than that. It's Alexander Payne and Paul Giamatti. I don't know what else to say.
When I was watching this movie, I think I texted this to you. I said to myself, Paul Giamatti is my favorite living actor.
Yeah.
It was kind of probably already obvious to me, but I think he's the only actor. Well, I will just watch anything because he's in it.
Right.
I mean, legit. I go back and watch movies because he's in it. I watched the John Adams miniseries that HBO did like a number of years ago just because he's in it.
Right.
and I'll say this because it struck me because I told my wife, she's like, what do you watch? I'm like, it's The Holdover. She's like, what's that? I'm like, it's a Paul Giamatti movie. She's like, oh, okay. She doesn't appreciate the genius.
Yeah.
But it's so she knows that I will watch anything with Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Because he's just so good. He's so compelling.
Obviously, the movie I was alluding to was Sideways. Alexander
Sideways, Bain, yeah, which is one of our absolute all-time favorites.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, amazing. But yeah, I mean, just, yeah, the again, character development in this movie, yeah, just them, you know, kind of in a situation where it's like they have no other choice but to be together and to make the most of it. And Paul Giamatti shows growth. Dominic Sessa shows growth. And, you know, there's so many little nuances and little things that happen. And just it's just a movie. It kind of is akin to Dead Poets Society, but in the opposite way, whereas they don't love the teacher at first, and then, you know, they they find common ground with him.
Isn't it funny how, because he's so abrasive, and he literally smells, and he's so off-putting to people. They give the character a disorder that makes him smell like fish,
right? And it's just like, ah. Oh. And then, yeah, just the things you find out about Paul Giamatti's character, and when he runs into people from his old school and he has to basically lie to them because he's too embarrassed to say what he really, you know, is doing with his life. And,
yeah, because in the world of the school, he's like the king of the classroom, but outside of the classroom, he's a bit of a failure and embarrassed by himself. He kind of wasted his intelligence and his talent. You know, he didn't really achieve his potential completely. He's sort of stuck he's stuck in the same place that he was when he was a kid, like 50 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, this is one we should have, you know, kind of broken.
Yeah, but we should do a show on this
because yeah, I mean, it's. There's, yeah, certainly a lot to it because, yeah, again, he's just one of those characters where, you know, he's at any age you can learn, at any age you can change, you can, you know, make your stamp, you know, I don't know, you can.
Yeah, you can be, exactly, you can influence someone for, you know, he was going about his. He was so rigid in the way he thought things should be done. And then he realized that I was just kind of being an asshole.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah,
and if I show a bit of kindness and kind of back off my rules, then that's what it might take to make a difference in someone else's life so that they don't end up kind of like me in a sense. Or so,
yeah. Do I really want someone to end up like me because of the way I am?
Right,
everyone else should be like me. And then just the relationship he builds with Angus is the character of Dominic Sessa in, you know, just realizing, oh, he's on, you know, depression pills as well, and
they're on the same medication.
Yeah, they're on the exact same medication, and it's just just heartwarming movie.
It's lots of subtle humor. I think Giamatti and Payne together are great at that.
I think Alexander Payne too is great because he did The Descendants with George Clooney, and that's like such a deep thing with his wife dying and stuff, and he's able to add those comedic elements, you know, to the movie.
I think this nice comeback from the movie Downsizing from a few years ago.
Oh my god, yes. Yeah. Oh, Downsizing. That was a movie where I saw the trailer every single film I went to, and I was like, oh, okay, all right. And then I got sick of the trailer, but I was like, I gotta watch it now. And
yeah, it was just, you watch like, it, it's terrible.
Shit, this is terrible. great comeback for him, and Paul Giamatti and him did fantastic in this film. We could, you know, obviously deep dive into this film, but it's just a top 10 list. That is our number 2 film of the year.
Maybe an episode down the road.
Well, yes, absolutely. What's our number 1, Dave?
It's Oppenheimer, baby.
Oppenheimer.
Kaboom.
Come on. I mean,
yeah. Kaboom, baby. Come on.
Kaboom. All right. Well, that is it for us for now.
You know what? I'm surprised. No Flower Moon for you. I didn't see it, but or did you not see it either?
I didn't either, bro. Oh. It's like 3.5 hours. I can't find the time.
You believe it? It's a year where neither one of us watched the Scorsese movie.
I
went through The Irishman, no problem. I got to tell you, this movie, I'm just not interested.
Yeah, I guess the subject matter and everything, like, and especially since I've been watching Yellowstone, it's like, all right, I've got my fill of Native American versus, you know, yeah, the white man. Like, I don't know. And you know, now I sympathize. You know, I'm not saying I don't like Native
Americans. Yeah, it's just, anything. Do I want to watch?
Calm down.
I've also seen the pictures of DiCaprio, and he's got like this scowl, and I'm like, what am I watching here?
I don't know. DiCaprio to me, man, I don't know. I don't think he's that great of an actor. Like, he's a movie star. He's just, I don't know.
I would push back there on. Well, I would take you to, what's the Tarantino movie?
Hollywood.
That one where where DiCaprio is screwing up on set and he literally transforms himself into a great performance. Yes, and you watch it in about 30 seconds. I was like, holy shit, you win Oscar here now.
Yeah, for that. You're right. I take that back, folks. DiCaprio is a fine actor and deserves my recognition.
He does. But yeah, this one just didn't. So we're just going to have to leave it alone. We both love Scorsese, but I don't imagine myself ever watching this one.
But let's say a couple sentences on our number one film, Oppenheimer. Yeah.
We have a review, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we have a review. Cillian Murphy, man. It's just the facial expressions, the impact that this bomb had on Oppenheimer, and just the way Christopher Nolan just directs it and brings you back to, again, it goes back to that whole conversation with Oppenheimer and Einstein and Robert Downey Jr.'s character being obsessed with what did they say to each other, and just the payoff at the end of what he says is just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, this to me is a masterpiece. Like, this, I know we said it could have been a little better when we first did the review, but I don't know. I think this was a masterpiece. This is just boom.
I think, I don't know. I think I would rate it a little higher, but I still feel like the stuff about the main plot of Oppenheimer was amazing. And I just didn't connect with, although Downey Jr.'s performance was good, I did not connect with that story. And there was so much to it. And I'm like, okay, the movie's over now. And now we got another 30 minutes here. That part of the plot, I still don't care about it. But everything else was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, again, I do need to watch it again. I've only seen it the one time, but I mean, I don't know. I think it sort of needed that to sort of bring, because it's not all about, oh, we're creating a bomb and boom, we bombed first. And we got the dilemma that Oppenheimer felt about it, and, you know, the guilt he may have felt about it. But then you got Robert Downey Jr. You got the political side. Like, it's like, dude, all these people died and we built this bomb that can destroy, you know, worlds. And you're just wanting to bring down this guy so you can get a little more political gain. Yeah. Like, to me, it brings out the ridiculousness of the political system and just how, yeah, just everything. It's like, I think it's almost meant to not matter. It's like, what does this matter? You know, we have now technology that can destroy the world, you know? So I guess to me, that's what kind of, I don't know if that was the intention, but to me, that's kind of how I'm taking it.
Yeah, that helps a little bit.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. It's also one of the things that I going back to our conversation that we've been or had since last year, which is movies that are both critically acclaimed and popular. And I think that's why we love Nolan, because he was good at finding that sweet spot. And God damn if he didn't do that again with this movie.
And this, I mean, I'm just glad. I think 100% this is his Oscar film. Finally, I think it's going to win Best Picture. At the very least, going to win him Best Director, and which we both wanted and thought for sure it was going to be Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is the one. So, because I know you are so enthralled with awards and you love them.
I care so much.
You care so much.
But it is for like, and I care. Well, what I care about is, I think the reason why maybe you care, which is when you got into watching movies, you probably looked at Best Picture winners.
Right.
Best Picture performances.
That's the list you go down when you
when you
start watching films.
And you trust it, right? Because if it's just some flavor of the week, you know, if in like okay, so like what's the movie with there's probably a bunch of them. Maybe Birdman. I don't know. There's a few there from within the last like 10, 15 years, which 30 years from now no one will ever go to. The way we went back to the old, you know, the classics that we watched,
right?
God, that were nominated, right? There's no way, like they just don't compare,
yeah.
What I'm saying is, the Oscars always the winner of an Oscar should be someone who is an all timer at all. I mean, every year you don't always get that person. That, you know, you have the movies that came out.
But yeah, that's what you hope for. How often are you going to go back to Spotlight?
Right. Yes. Great, great, great one. Spotlight, and right? Never. Yeah. No one will ever watch it.
I have no reason to watch it. I have all the President's Men. That's not the same story. Never mind. I was thinking that was the same story.
Well, similar, but that's a news story, investigative journalism for a different reason, but that's a good example. That's an all-timer. For a president that, you know, from the 1970s, which is not even relevant to our lives at all, but the movie's amazing still.
Right.
Spotlight was just a few years ago, and who cares?
So, exactly.
And so from that perspective, and I think Oppenheimer will, this is the movie that should win, because this is the one that I want when my daughter grows up and she's 20 years old and she's getting into film. She'll say, oh, this one, Best Picture, I should go watch this one, and she will not be disappointed by it.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at, even the last few winners, Nomadland, Coda.
Coda, yeah.
Coda, like, it was a fine film. Nomadland, boring.
Yes.
You know, it's...
Parasite was good.
Huh?
Parasite was good.
But I just don't see a lot of people going to it just because of the whole foreign film aspect.
Right.
Everything Everywhere All at Once. Yeah, I could see people going to that maybe. You don't have them. Like, I know we sound like old men, like, oh, they don't make them like they used to. But, like, to your point, yeah, when you go back to a Best Picture film, like, that's the criteria you look at, especially when you first watch films. And I think that goes to, like, the 70s films, you know, because those are kind of what we all sort of started out with, no matter our age. Like, yeah, you had Godfather 2. You had One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Exactly. Movies like that, which Chinatown, Rocky. I don't know. Rocky, yeah. I mean, and audiences, they're validated by the audience.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and which is important. Because and this is what Oppenheimer's been validated by the audience. And 100%. The critics. This will be an all-timer. And if it doesn't win, this is the one you get outraged about.
Yeah.
I think.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Because I think when Dunkirk won, I think That was the year of your favorite movie, I think.
Three Billboards.
Yeah, Three Billboards.
Well, yeah, Moonlight won that year, right?
No, Moonlight won the
year.
Was
it Shape of Water?
Yeah, Shape of Water. That was the one, yep.
Oh, the movie I couldn't... I watched it three times. All three times I fell asleep. And I've never...
That was one I loved, but I've never gone back to, and I probably never will. I mean, it was just...
I saw this funny tweet. I don't know who, but it just popped up in my timeline. It's like... And it was something kind of along the thing that the conversation we had. It was like, my grandma watches Best Picture winner, and she's expecting Lawrence of Arabia, but she gets a lady having sex with a fish.
Exactly. Like, it's just, yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, it used to be where, yeah, the American public knew the movie that won Best Picture. If I said Spotlight to my dad, I don't think he would know what that movie was. If I said Nomadland to my dad or Coda, he would not know what those movies were. He might know what Everything Everywhere All at Once was, just because it's a weird name and a lot of people have heard of it. So I'm just like trying to think of like movies that like my dad might have heard of, like, and that to me is like a gauge of if the American public knows of it, you know. So I can see the uproar about Barbie, like it was, you know, a great cultural success and everything. To me, it's not an Oscar movie at all, but
I don't mind the nomination for that point, because it gets people really engaged. It's not a shit movie.
But the fact that Oppenheimer, you know, also did fantastic at the box office,
yeah,
you know, also makes it to me. Yeah. Just,
I mean, I got the list here from Everywhere All at Once all the way back to 12 Years a Slave. And I'm looking at these movies and I don't know. I don't know.
Hold on. Let me try to guess. 12 Years a Slave. That was like 2013.
14. All right. Well, okay. I mean,
and then it was Spotlight.
God, none of this is great. I mean, you got to go. All right. I got Argo. Does Argo count for you as an all-timer?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I liked it. I just, again, that's another one I'm gauging by. If I asked my dad what Argo was, I don't think he would know.
Okay, so I'm going back to No Country for Old Men in 2008.
Yes.
And then The Departed in 2007. Because otherwise I got Slumdog Millionaire, The King's Speech. Well, The Hurt Locker's good, but The Artist, Argo, as we mentioned, 12 Years a Slave, Birdman, Spotlight, Moonlight, so two lights, Shape of Water, Green Book, which is good, but Parasite.
Yeah, like it was just, yeah.
Yeah. Parasite, Nomadland, Coda, everything. So we're kind of struggling here.
Yeah.
But the 2000s were good. The 90s were good. Except for Forrest Gump, go kill yourself. But
your favorite movie.
My hatred for that movie knows no bounds. All in all, I mean, when you look at like between The Holdovers and Oppenheimer, I mean, I've got like Iron Claw and Napoleon around there. You've got Past Lives. But all in all, I think at the top was actually a pretty good year now that I think about it.
Well, even The Holdovers, like, I think if I'm not basing this all on my dad. My dad's an idiot. Like The Holdovers, he might know at this very moment, like he might have heard of it. But like if I ask him a year or two from now, he'd probably be like, what are you talking about? So like that's even another one. But by the way, in regards to our list, one I thought you were going to say, which is one I totally forgot about, was Blackberry. When you mentioned Tetris. Oh.
Yeah. That one just kind of, that'd be an honorable.
Okay. Yeah. For some reason, I thought that was going to be on your list. I might have replaced that with Poor Things, but I'm glad I had Poor Things on there. But yeah, Blackberry was just, I thought that was going to be on your list.
So that's like number 11 for both of us, probably.
Yeah, probably. What was that? Tetris, was that kind of like the same?
Yeah, it's kind of between. Yeah, because like I like all the same movies.
Gran Turismo is on Blockbuster Mentality's top 10 2023.
You hate me now.
No, it's all good. I'm never gonna watch it, but I know it's. You're never gonna watch Past Lives.
Absolutely not.
You might. All right, folks. Well, that is our top 10 of 2023. I'm not even going to promise anything, but we're going to try to get more episodes out and fulfill your needs.
Why bother at this point?
Yeah, I know. What difference does it make? We just talk and drink and have fun with each other. So
what do we want? We want to.
Yeah, I really want to watch Iron Claw because I know how badly you want to do an episode on that, which...
Does that get you moving? Yeah.
Yeah, it gets me motivated and, you know, I want to watch that.
So. We need, well, because when we used to have guests that would that would force us to show up, we need some kind of a, we got to find that.
Well, let's get Dan Franco on again.
Yeah, Franco, yeah.
Remember?
Come on, Dan.
Dan, come on. Come we need you. Dan. And I want to get back to Flopbuster mentality.
I do, well, yeah. So. Well, yeah, we had that whole thing going, didn't we?
God.
There was that Almost Famous episode that broke you because I hated it.
Let's stop moving to Virginia and just...
stop having babies.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, yeah, that is our top movies of 2023 that we saw anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe Killers of the Flower Moon will be David? I never call you David. It will be Dave's favorite movie of all time. All right, folks. Well, that is it for us. You can follow us at BlockbusterCast on Twitter, Blockbuster Mentality on Instagram. Dave is Dave_Quist on Twitter or X. And yeah, BlockbusterMentality.com, all that jazz. Let us know what you want to see. Let us know what your favorite movies of 2023 were. Anything else, Dave?
That's all, buddy.
All right, folks. Well, that is it for me. For Dave, I'm Ben. And as always, grab some popcorn. Grab some snacks. We'll catch you guys
at the movies.